Hi, everybody, and welcome to Two Off the First. It is just the day before Thanksgiving, Wednesday, November 22nd. I'm Ryan Balanchy. Thanks for being here. I am here at my in-law's house just outside of Latrobe, Pennsylvania. We're going to have a nice Thanksgiving here. Hopefully, you will do the same. There is plenty to talk about today, though, and frankly, a lot of it is LIV-focused. So we'll talk a little bit about the LIV 2024 schedule. We will talk about the ratcheting up of rumors about Jon Rahm potentially signing with LIV that has kind of taken on a life of its own in the last 24 hours or so. And then we'll also talk about Paul Azinger not being a part of the NBC broadcast team, really starting next week, but his run as the lead analyst with NBC Sports is over, at least for now. We'll talk about the why of that. We are presented by our friends at Swannies. Check them out, swannies.co. You can get 35% off, better than our promo code, 35% off of purchases of at least $100 with the promo code INSIDER, swannies.co. We'll tell you about our promo code in the post-Black Friday melee, but at least for now, use that promo code INSIDER, get 35% off of $100 purchases at swannies.co. Lots and lots of great stuff, holiday-themed hoodies, t-shirt hoodies that I love, quarter zips, pull-ups, windbreaker styles, anoraks, all kinds of great stuff. And a bunch of it's already in my cart already for the holiday season. So swannies.co for that. All right, let's start with, I guess, the Jon Rahm rumor. Because this thing's been around for a while. It goes back to last year. And it kind of reared its head again at the season-ending DP World Tour Championship in Dubai. Even reared its head, honestly, before that. There had been some conversation, you know, in rumor circles that Rahm had been talking to LIV, and I am there are reasons to believe that to be the case before the whole rumor mill got even spun up more. Tim Mickelson used to be Jon Rahm's coach at Arizona State. Phil and John are fairly tight. John and Sergio are fairly tight. And obviously those guys have significant pull on LIV. And then I think the ratcheting up of this kind of came up when Rahm said he wasn't going to play in TGL in the inaugural season before everything happened with the bubble and it getting deflated and the season being delayed to 2025. But he, you know, kind of said, I kind of have commitments. I just can't do all of this. And there was kind of this assumption that he was going to LIV that day. Well, that didn't come out, right? And so I think that quieted things down a little bit. And Rory McIlroy said he had talked to Jon Rahm recently. I believe this was like November 2nd. And that he would be surprised that if Rahm went to LIV, because he considers Rahm probably a PGA Tour guy, kind of a legacy guy, so to speak, I guess. And with the money available on the PGA Tour being awfully comparable to LIV, why would you make that switch? But I think the argument to be made from Rahm, and this is financial, this is not ethical or moral, but this is one we made a few weeks ago, that if this is a merger that is going to happen, if there is a merger to happen between the Public Investment Fund, PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, into some kind of for-profit subsidiary organization in which the Public Investment Fund has a stake, then there's a realistic possibility that LIV, as we understand it, goes away. Might be morphed, might change into something else, who knows, but that it goes away. And if that's the case, then any superstar that did not take LIV's money has a very limited window with which to sign with LIV and still get the money before it all collapses and goes away. So if the merger's happening, the PGA Tour has effectively said, we're cool with the Public Investment Fund so long as they invest with us, then what's to stop someone like Rahm or another player from choosing to take the Saudi bonus money, prop up this thing for a year or two, and then just go right on back to the PGA Tour? What is to stop him from doing that? Now, there's some logic with that doesn't quite work, right? If you're the Saudis, you go, okay, well, we're just going to fold this thing in anyway. Why would I pay Jon Rahm hundreds of millions of dollars to play in our circuit when we could just invest in the PGA Tour and probably pluck guys out for less money. Why would you do that? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. If you're going, well, we're just going to throw $1 billion, $1.5 billion, $2 billion of the PGA Tour in whole. Why would I throw $200, $300, $400, $500 million, whatever that number is, at Jon Rahm specifically for his services for a limited period of time before he's just under the PGA Tour umbrella? That doesn't add up to me. That piece of this whole rumor thing doesn't add up to me. If you're Rahm, I can understand it. Again, I can understand wanting to cash in, not thinking about any of the ethical components of this. But if you want to cash in, this is your window, because if you think the deal's going through, that's it. Now, if you don't think the deal's going through, and the 2024 schedule seems to suggest some thought that it might not go through, if you think it's not going to go through, then game's back on, right? If, for whatever reason, the PGA Tour chooses to not work with the public investment fund in this minority stake, they go, let's just say, with Fenway Sports. And Fenway Sports takes it all, and they invest their multi-billion dollars, blah. But the Saudis go, well, okay, we're going to take that money we were going to spend, and we're going to put it in the LIV. And that means the bonus pools are back open. We're going to try to get everybody that we possibly can. Who is your first available target at the top of the world ranking? Jon Rahm. Scheffler's probably not going anywhere. He's a family guy, likes to stay at home, doesn't really like to travel all that much. Rory is obviously not going to live. He has very explicitly said he's not going to live. So your next best target, or your next available target, I don't know if next best, but anyway, it's Jon Rahm. So you throw this huge sum of money at him, just as huge as they threw at Hideki Matsuyama, if not larger, and they say, okay, we want you to come play. Now, all the rumors that have come out, and this really started with 10 Golf. They're a Spanish language golf publication. They do a great job. They do sports stupid. They do a great job. And they reported this, and then it got aggregated to hell by an account called Flushing at Golf. It's like probably someone who in the LIV know-how community. Maybe it's an agent. I don't know. I don't really care. And then got further aggregated by Bunkered, which they're fine. But anyway, 10 Golf kind of puts this out there, and then it gets spun up even more in the subsequent days after the DP World Tour Championship concludes. And they got this notion that Rahm's in late stage talks is what they had said in the English-speaking version of this rumor. And at the same time, it said that there no deal is imminent, but Rahm is closer to signing with LIV than ever. And okay, fine, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's 99% there. It can mean he's 47% there. I don't know. I don't pretend to know. But that doesn't mean it's imminent. It just means there's probably a large sum of money on the table. Rahm is considering it, given the other climate in which he plays. And there is a real-world non-zero possibility that he plays with LIV. Okay? That is all very well possible. However, along with the English-speaking rumors that he's in late-stage talks, part of the bolt-on to the rumor is that he wants a change in the format. Well, is LIV willing to change its entire format to get a two-time major winner and one of the three best players in the world? Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to change the team thing or make it 72 holes or have a cut or have more players? What does that entail? Is that something that would require, for example, LIV to have bigger fields if they wanted to have 60 players? Well, now you got to get 12 more people. Is that something you're willing to do? Are you willing to acquire good players for those 12 players? Or are you just going to pluck off the next best players you can get that are available that are willing to sign for much lower amounts of money than Jon Rahm? There's a lot of ifs here. And rumor mills love to work hard. There was a rumor mill running really hard last year that Victor Hovland was going to sign, that Hideki was going to sign, that all kinds of other players were going to sign. It didn't work out that way. I'll know the outcome of this, and I am going to hold out, obviously, because I don't have a source that will tell me one way or the other. So that's the rumor mill on this. But I don't think that you should immediately jump to conclusions one way or the other about the state of Jon Rahm playing the PGA Tour or the DP World Tour for that matter, because he loves playing the Spanish Open. He would have to effectively resign DP World Tour membership, and at least in the current climate, he would have to not, it would have to be a sponsor invite. That would be extremely awkward for the DP World Tour to stomach. I don't know how they would handle that. That would be a very important piece of this to Jon Rahm. He likes playing in his home country, likes playing in those events. He likes knowing that he's won that many Spanish Opens. Does that matter to him? There's a lot of rumor, there's a lot of buzz, but I don't know that there's a whole lot of proof. So we'll leave it to that and go from there. We'll go ahead and take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the LIV 2024 schedule, and we'll also talk about Paul Azinger being out of the booth at NBC after this word from our sponsor. If you're like me, you've wanted to buy gold for years. Lots of commercials out there, but who can you really trust? I don't want a bad investment, but didn't want to miss the boat either. Sound familiar? Fortunately, I've got great news. If you have an IRA or 401k and want to buy physical gold, eliminate fear and uncertainty from the process using the new Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist. It helps you evaluate and choose the best gold IRA company. I used it personally to vet Augusta Precious Metals, and they are absolutely phenomenal. Use this checklist to choose the best gold IRA company. Text to get your free Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist today. Text GOLF to 68592. Again, text GOLF to 68592. That's GOLF to 68592. Or go to AugustaPreciousMetals.com. All right, welcome back, everybody. You would think things just kind of calmed down a little bit around Thanksgiving, and no, that golf doesn't work that way anymore. We are a 13-month sport in a 12-month calendar, and you've got this Rahm stuff. We got the LIV schedule we're going to talk about in a second. Tiger Woods and Charlie Woods are going to play the PNC Championship. That news came out today. That event is December 16th and 17th in Orlando at the Ritz-Carlton. And also, Steve Stricker and his daughter are going to play. Stricker's daughter is a pro. She plays on the Epson Tour. Saw him at the French Lick event this year caddying for her. He does a great job. Incredible guy that just dominates the PGA Tour champions. And oh, by the way, caddies for his wife and daughter when they play competitive golf. It's pretty amazing. A really great guy. Anyhow, let's talk about, we'll go back to LIV at the end. Let's talk about Paul Azinger. So Paul Azinger is out as the lead analyst for NBC Sports in their booth. He had a 5-year run, and it came to an end, apparently, with the Ryder Cup. He will not call the Hero World Challenge, which is their final, quote-unquote, PGA Tour event of the year that's sanctioned by the PGA Tour, next week. The last event of the year is the PNC Championship. That is technically a Champions Tour event, which is why I say that. So Azinger, you know, the AP was first to report that Azinger's out and that his contract was not going to be extended or renewed or whatever. And then Alex Maselli did a little bit of additional reporting for Sports Illustrated, a guy who has some pretty good sources on these kinds of contract things, and probably being a guy who was with Golf Channel forever, still has plenty of sources in the company, and expounds upon this more. Why did this happen? Was it just that they didn't want him back? Was he fired? What exactly was it? It turns out that wasn't the case. That wasn't it. Azinger wasn't fired. He was negotiating a 1 or maybe 2 year extension with NBC Sports and with Comcast to continue in this role. However, they came back to him with an offer that was substantially lower than what he had been making in his first contract. He decided to counter, and they said, no, we're moving on. So he's out, but it isn't necessarily because they didn't like what he brought to the telecast, although a lot of people would tell you they don't like Azinger in that role, and I think he hasn't been particularly good the last couple of years. But it's more about money than it is about the talent. And that is indicative of what's happening at Golf Channel and NBC Sports, but particularly Golf Channel as part of NBC Sports, and how they're trying to make this contract with the PGA Tour work, because they pay an enormous sum of money to the PGA Tour every year for a rights fee to air PGA Tour events, not only on NBC for the ones they have all four rounds, but every single PGA Tour event for which they air the first two rounds. And that's in conjunction with the CBS, and, or at least it was, and sort of, it's sort of changed now, but not entirely. And that money that they are spending now is in an environment where people are shedding cable left and right. There are way fewer people that have Golf Channel in their homes than they did even 3 years ago, much less 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And the money they make every single month off of Golf Channel coming in the door from subscribers is dramatically lower. The commercial environment is not good. People are fleeing. Advertising buyers are fleeing traditional linear television because you can't do the same kinds of targeting you can on TV as you can on, for example, streaming channels, streaming services. You can't have the same kind of targeting that you can have on social media or other places. The TV audience is getting older. That's good for golf, but that's not great for advertisers necessarily. So the rates are going down. Viewership is down. The viewership throughout the fall has been terrible. And all of that leads to a world for Golf Channel where they've still got to pay this money in this contract, and they don't want to lose their entire rear trying to cover this contract because it's effectively probably a loss leader at this point. So they've got to save money where they can, and that's led to moving their entire production facility from Orlando to Stamford, Connecticut, to not sending any production people over to Italy for the Ryder Cup, doing it all remotely, to trying to see a lot more synergy between their Sky Sports coverage, in which they have a piece, and the Golf Channel talent that they have in terms of in front of the camera and behind the camera. And they want and need to put in more commercials. That's why you see more commercials, because they pay a whole lot more. They can't just charge more to people. They've got to run more commercials. So the end experience for the golf fan is not better. It's not a mirage. It's not just a petty complaint that Golf Channel's coverage is not as good as it once was, or NBC's coverage is not as good as it once was. Again, on-camera talent aside, what you think of those opinions, but Roger Maltby, Gary Koch are gone, Paul Azinger's gone. Now you're going to have to replace whoever you want to be your 18th tower guy. Now, Kurt Byram's going to do that job for the Hero World Challenge. And Kurt does a great job. I really like Kurt Byram. He's very level-headed. He's a good commentator. I think you may have learned watching CBS sports coverage this year that you don't need an all-time great in the 18th tower or someone who's captained a Ryder Cup team or anything like that. You know, you don't need that to be a great commentator. Trevor Immelman has been fantastic, I think, in this role. And he's really embraced it. And I think he's great. I think he's done wonderful. And he's probably a relative bargain for CBS Sports. But that's not necessarily what they're trying to do. But for NBC Sports, this matters. So in terms of who's going to replace Azinger, I don't know. I think you have some options out there. I've heard some interesting ones suggested. Of course, you could have Kurt Byram take the role. You could have Justin Leonard take the role. I think Justin Leonard does a great job. I do wonder if there's some interest in having Brandel Chamblee in the role. I don't think he would want that. I think he likes doing things the way he does them now, by doing the studio shows and then having the rest of his week free. But who knows what comes with that? They'd have to give him a big bump in pay. They're trying to cut payroll, so maybe that's not going to happen. But I don't think they're going to go and, you know, for example, get Nick Faldo out of retirement to go do this. They're not going to go harken on somebody that's already done this in the past. So they probably got someone on staff they like now, whether that's Byram, whether that's Leonard, whether that's Paul McGinley, whether they could convince him to come over and do it. I think he does a fantastic job. But the end result, I think most golf fans will like, but the motivation behind it, you may not like. So wanted to kind of cut through that all. And there's a reason why we didn't talk about it initially when it came out, because I figured there was something more to it than just Azinger's not there anymore. There was a reason why, whether it was a performance thing, whether it was a money thing, whether it was both. And that did come out, and then we get a chance to talk about it here. Okay, final story for today, and we're not going to do a show on Thursday, maybe on Friday, depending. But we'll round out the show with this. We'll bookend Liv things, I suppose. Liv did finally put out its schedule today. I don't know why I said finally. I mean, they put it out like 3 weeks before last year. And Brooks Koepka has been asking for this thing on social media for weeks. Finally gets it. And the Liv schedule for next year indicates, I don't know if it indicates a shift in thinking necessarily, but it does indicate a couple of different shifts in approach for Liv. So next year, half of their events are US based, and it's a little bit closer to eight to six. So they're focusing more on international stops for next year. And that's probably to their benefit. They have found more traction in international stops, particularly the Australia stop was great. The others, you know, not so much. Singapore got a little bit of attraction, I suppose, but not all that much. But they've kind of decided to make some changes. So the first big change, Trump venues are gone. They're out the door. Now, you would think, depending on your political lean, this is a smart move. But I would say it's not only a smart move because of the political situation and who knows what's going to happen with Trump and all the different indictments and his political viability, what's happened with DeSantis. I'm not saying anything about that. However, from a financial perspective, it costs Liv a lot of money to rent out Trump courses, and what they got in return really wasn't that great. There weren't many great crowds in Miami. The crowds in D.C. were non-existent. And the crowds at Trump Bedminster were pretty nice the first year, but the second year they weren't good. So you had three events of your 14 events scheduled at Trump property, and they were all in cities where Trump is not popular between the New York metropolitan area, D.C., and I guess to a degree in Miami he's popular, but not that popular, not popular enough to drive 45 minutes out of the way to go to Doral. So those were not good venues, not only politically, but financially. So they're out. So instead, they have replaced them with markets that I think are probably more viable for Liv, not only politically, but also in terms of golf consumption. So they will start their schedule at Mayakoba again, first weekend of February. The next weekend, they will play in Las Vegas at Las Vegas Country Club, which is was a long time ago a PGA Tour site. That event will run Thursday through Saturday, so it will compete with the Phoenix Open. The first event competes with Pebble Beach. Then you've got their third event is in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia, so they have wisened up and realized that no one really watches the event in Saudi Arabia, but it has to be done, so do it early, don't do it late. Then they will have an event in Hong Kong at Hong Kong Golf Club that had been rumored. And that's also a site of the Hong Kong Open on the Asian Tour. So there's some connection there. There will be an event the week before the Masters and the other majors as well, by the way. That event in the week before the Masters doesn't have a place yet. I can promise you it is not going to be Orange County National again, but they have not announced a venue for that. Then they're going back to Australia. They talked about that. They're going back to Singapore. So that's all post-Masters. They do not have a pre-PGA Championship tournament. So they're basically off at that point throughout May. Until they're off for a month. They have a pre-US Open event in Houston, Golf Club of Houston, former host of the Shell Houston Open, when it was the Shell Houston Open, on the PGA Tour. Then they will go to Nashville. They will go to a place called The Grove, which actually currently, but probably will not next year, hosts the Simmons Bank Open on the Korn Ferry Tour. It's one of their Korn Ferry Tour finals events. So I assume the Nashville event will find a new home on the Korn Ferry Tour. Then they go to Spain again, and they will play in Andalusia, Valderrama. Then they'll play JCB Country Club in England for their 11th event. And then their final, quote-unquote, regular season event will be back at Greenbrier in the middle of August. They didn't announce two events. One event they're calling their individual championship, and then after that will be their team championship. So I guess they're kind of going to rebrand the final individual event as a bigger deal because it'll be the culmination of all this stuff. I don't know if they're changing formats or anything like that, but all this seems to suggest they're going to put a little bit more emphasis on the final two tournaments, but they haven't announced those venues yet. The big change here is that the PGA Tour, the idea that LIV was going to play their events predominantly opposite weaker PGA Tour events has gone away. They're going straight up against a bunch of signature events, and they're going to have events the week before majors, except for the PGA. Now, the events before majors was pretty much a must. The players were very angry last year that they didn't have a schedule that allowed them to prepare properly for the majors. And that Orange County National event was just kind of thrown together in somewhat of response to that. So now that they have the schedule aligned to those three pre-major events, I think that makes some sense for them and for their players. Going into Las Vegas makes sense because it's an event that won't be considered a fall event. Same thing with Houston, although Houston will now be a PGA Tour FedEx Cup, main part of the schedule venue. Nashville makes sense. It's a kind of market that it's a party town kind of place, has decent golf, has a decent golf community, but only gets a Korn Ferry Tour event. Then Greenbrier is Greenbrier. But if you look at what they have in the United States currently, you assume the team championship will wind up in the United States or the individual championship, one or the other. But you've got Las Vegas, somewhere in the U.S., Houston, Nashville, and Greenbrier. So you got five American events right now. I assume there will be a sixth. It'll be 8-6. So that's pretty interesting. I think the recognition that they have more viability overseas or outside of the United States is better. So we'll see how it all works out. But I think the philosophy here is the idea of going up against weaker PGA Tour events was a bad idea because no one was paying attention to golf. So why would they pay attention to LIV? It wasn't like, oh, well, this PGA Tour event is not deep or good. It's weak. We'll go watch LIV instead. It was more like, no one's watching golf. No one wins. So I think they're hoping the opposite will be true. If everyone's tuned into golf, maybe they'll kind of come along and watch LIV on Saturday and Sunday. I don't know if that's going to work. We'll see. Now, the other thing to point out, and this is, of course, subject to change, just like anything else, but they did say that they will not air their Friday first rounds on TV. Still going to be streaming, which I think is interesting because there had been talk, they had talked it up, that they might get a rights fee to have those first rounds appear somewhere else on television. That obviously did not work out. So that still tells you something about the viability of LIV, at least relative to what they think their value is, that they could not get someone to take that first round. They're still streaming it. All that to say, there's a lot of news for November 22nd, and I'm kind of surprised that that is the case, but here we are. We're doing a 30-minute show on November 22nd, and I'm sure there will be some more news over the next several days, the way this is sounding. Oh, by the way, Pat Perez re-signed with the Four Aces, just in case you were wondering. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show, and probably for the week, unless something crazy happens, and then we'll do an emergency version of the show. But I hope you have a happy Thanksgiving if you're celebrating. Spend some time with your family or people you care about. And whether that means you're with a ton of people, one other person, just by yourself, whatever it is. But I hope you have a happy Thanksgiving. And we will be back with shows most likely next week. Get a hold of me on Twitter, X, Threads, Instagram, and now Blue Sky at the handle Ryan Ballingy. You can email me, Ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. And we will talk to you next time on Two Off the First.